This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Boring, boring.
Okay, one thing the game needs is more people like you. You.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
It's Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
There's Saul Tlamakia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring.
Welcome to another edition of West Coast Bias, presented by Baseball Isn't Boring. We're going to talk a lot about West Coast baseball this year. Goes without saying, because obviously it's in the title. But what's happening right now in the baseball universe kind of happens to all fall in the eastern part of the country. So we're going to talk about that. And who better with anyone else that's just as dialed in, if not more so than more, most, than the number two in command at this entity of Baseball Isn't Boring, Rob Bradford from WEEI/Baseball Isn't Boring. Bradford, how are you, my guy?
Number two in command. Yeah, it's is it the number two in command, the one that does all the work? Yeah,
that's listen. I'm not going. Listen, if we've learned anything boss.
Hey, listen. No, Alonzo. Here's the thing: is that as we have found out through our LLCs, our chief commander, Joe Kelly. Everything is on the table. We are very transparent. We are honest. Yeah. So if we're going to say, hey, listen, who's doing all the work? It's me. So,
hey, I mean, he's trying to get back to 100%. And we hope the boss man gets back to 100%, because I'm here for more memes. That's all I'm here for.
Oh, well, we don't even need to get let's be honest. We don't even need to get him to have him get into 100%. He'll get there. He'll land somewhere. I mean, he'll land somewhere, wherever he's going to land, it's going to be in a great place in life. But in the meantime, we did the podcast recently with him, with Joe, and I kind of was like wondering, how much do you miss it? Because this is the first time, I think, in his adult life that he hasn't been in spring training in late February.
Yeah.
That must be a weird thing, right? That must be a little odd. But he's chasing around his kid. And then, what's also amazing and unique about Joe is that when he says he's not on social media and oblivious to this stuff, he is not on social media and oblivious to this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, as I said to Joe, I said, as the person, what he wants to call me, but as the person running his ship, I would expect that he would want me to ask him the important questions. And the very important question, because I hadn't talked to him, was what was your reaction to Aaron Boone's statement about, Joe's statement? And he legitimately had no idea. I mean, this is Alonzo. This is like what, a week, a couple weeks old.
Yeah,
right?
At least a couple weeks old.
Yeah, and I don't think it was buried underneath a bunch of other news. I mean, people knew about this, so of course I had to sort of try to find it and read it to him. And once he starts saying "bro," like I know he's amping up. Like that's the tell. It's like "bro." Bro, like it's the analogy he had about his 9-year-old travel team being able to cover first, and it's like, but you know who I know who doesn't know how to cover first.
Yeah.
Dot 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 dot. Yeah.
Yeah, you could tell he had that one in the chamber. He had that one in the chamber.
Yeah. So he was, and he's not backing off of it. And you know what? You know, I'm sure I'll run into Aaron Boone at some point. I don't even know if he knows, you know, what the deal is here. But I would hope that Aaron Boone would also embrace this, embrace the back and forth. I kind of feel like Aaron Boone would do that. He's that type of guy. So just embrace it. We're having a little feud. We're going to have a little back and forth. You know, it's okay. It's okay.
Hey, and who knows? He could. There's a lot of options as to where Joe can land, because obviously in baseball, arms go down and you have to fill that in with an arm. You have that need to fill. I don't think it'll happen, but I would be stoked if the Red Sox gave him a call. Just throw that into the mix. Yeah,
He's not moving across the country.
No, not a chance.
You can read between the lines.
Yes.
I mean, there's one place. There's one place.
And that place would be a fit, right? I mean, we've talked about how tight that bullpen was last year, so on and so forth. But no, there's not at this point in his career. No, he's not, unless it's an incredibly lucrative offer. There's no chance that he's moving across. Well,
let me ask you this, Alonzo, and you have a much better perspective of this than I do. And I want you to be honest, because again, we're all about honesty. So Joe has a mural up, I think it's gate 7 on Dodger Stadium, right?
Correct.
You walk in, it's right there, 30 feet high. How long does that stay up?
That's a great question. I actually, ironically enough, I was thinking about this the other day. That's a good question. I think, listen, I mean, the guy that's going to get murals there, I mean, the next guy that's going to get murals there is one Frederick Freeman. He's going to be getting a mural there at some point.
Yeah.
That's really the only one that I could think of that would replace that for the time being. But I mean, he's still, man, Joe Kelly is still a revered personality.
It's kind of though like one of these things where it's going to become almost sort of so unique. And so, I don't know, like it's where people will walk by, and this is a knock on Joe, obviously, but kids will walk by and say, who is that? What is that? What? Look, well, everyone gather around. Let me tell you about the story. So, yeah.
No, and I think that's a good question, though. Like, when you think about kind of what Joe Kelly means to that place, it's a special thing, right? And obviously, you tie it back to the Astros thing. He wasn't even on the team. You know, he went to bat for the team. He's won a chip there now. And so I honestly, I think that's a very fair question as to how long that mural lasts there. And really, for me, the question would be, what would they cover it up with? And for me, the only things that make sense are Freeman, Ohtani.
But you have other walls. I mean, you have other walls.
Yeah, so. No. You have, I mean, but again, that's still a very fair question. How long does that stay up there? Because there's going to come a point where it's like, gather around, y'all. It's story time with Uncle Bradford.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. I mean, the next thing you know, we're going to be, let me tell you the story about this tattoo. Hey, I'll see all this saggy flesh on my arm. If you make it out, it says baseball isn't boring. Let me tell you that story.
By the way, how is the tattoo healing?
Oh, it's good. Yeah. You have tats? You have tats?
Yeah, my leg.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had never gotten one. I'll never get another one, because how do you get another one when you have the Michelangelo of tattoos, you know?
Oh,
but you really can't go down to, like, North Fort Myers here and say, hey, I'll give you another fourth tattoo along with the Mr. Cartoon tattoo. But it felt like a sunburn for a while. And then you're just sort of really paranoid. They give you all the stuff, and you're really paranoid of like, wait, if I don't take care of this, it's going to wash away. So, yeah, no, it's good. It's a good conversation starter. But I want to come back to some of the dynamic, and this is going to bring it back to East Coast, what's going on. So the great thing about this, and I hope that you get a chance to experience this as well, is the connections that we have through Joe, right? We have all these people who know Joe, who dealt with Joe. I've got to know, and then because I get to know them, then I get to know somebody else, and so forth and so on. But then you have a dynamic where, in case people don't know, like, you know, I cover the Red Sox primarily. That's where I'm based right now, Fort Myers, doing the radio broadcast. And so Alex Bregman gets dropped in. Alex Bregman seems like an awesome dude, an awesome player, everything about it. But don't read the first few, don't read the first chapter of A Damn Near Perfect Game, Alex, please. Like, I'm not going to like introduce it to him, but it is a little weird for me.
I one of the things I thought about, so as you recall, a couple weeks ago, I had Robbie Hyde on, and Robbie obviously was lobbying really hard to get Bregman to join the Red Sox. And I mean, candidly, that marriage just made too much sense, right? And we've talked about it a bunch in text and so on and so forth. Now he's a Dodger. And then the literally the first thing that popped into my mind was that chapter, because I remember when we read that book, when we did that conversation when I was with Bleedlos, and I was like, oh, I forgot about this, and let's hope Alex Bregman never asks about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's again, it's the, like you said, the dynamic of it all. Because Bregman does seem like a good dude. Like,
he is a good dude. Yeah.
He seems like, and obviously he can play ball. But it's, yeah, that's, so let us hope that Bregman, you know, I feel like he may not ask about it, but let's just not bring it up.
Nah, yeah, exactly. You don't just don't bring it up. And one of the things about baseball is that it is like such a like short-term memory, fickle sort of thing.
Yeah.
Guys who hate guys. And I'll give the Bregman is a perfect example of this. After the Houston thing, him and Cora weren't getting along, like, for obvious reasons, right?
Yeah.
You know, he was a player and all the players got no penalty at all. The guys who got penalty was Cora and Hinch and Beltran because they weren't part of the organization. And so they get all the players get immunity. I know that for Cora, it was like, really, really, this is what we're doing. So there had to be some fences mended. And I think even before this, like in the last couple of years, they did that. But it's an example, like all this time heals all wounds, you know, it's like, so it's all good. But yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. Yeah. So it's all
good.
Let
me ask you this. You've been in spring training with the Sox. You've obviously been there. You've been there, what, like almost 2 weeks now?
Yeah, about a week and a half, yeah.
Week and a half. What's the vibe been like around camp before and after the Bregman signing?
I think it was pretty good before, and then it just took up a notch when it got there. And it wasn't only because you had a guy that finally the Red Sox were living life in the big boys club, maybe not the level of the Dodgers big boy club, but the big boys club, you finally won a free agent bidding. But also just because it was, for lack of a better term, another adult in the room. I think the best teams have that dynamic. This is, everyone knew that was the case with Bregman, that he was going to bring an instant leadership, kind of like on along the lines of what Justin Turner did. It's not like, you know, you get on a stool in the middle of the room and said, okay, everyone gather around, fellas. No, it's not like that. It says, you know, when you know. They knew when Justin Turner got dropped in, but he was a 38-year-old DH. Alex Bregman is a better player, a younger player, and everybody, like, for, I'll give you, for instance, the Red Sox have these three top prospects, top, I think, you know, 15 in the game, and Christian Campbell, Marcelo Meyer, and Roman Anthony. Roman Anthony might be the top prospect in baseball. And he, and the first day, Alex Bregman sits at a table in the lunchroom for an hour with these kids, for an hour, and just talks about baseball, about being professional and everything else. And it wasn't like they organized it. It wasn't like he said, hey, come on. It was this organic moment, which those three young players will never forget. So I think that, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, I mean, I think it's made a huge difference.
No, and I mean, and that's, like you said, it's winning a free agent, right? Like a marquee free agent, if you will, you know, because they've, for lack of a better term, kind of swung and missed over the last couple of years. And they needed, you know, they needed that. Well, then now we move ahead to one of the most, I don't want to say bizarre, but one of the most direct press conferences that I've ever seen, in at least in my time working in sports. The Rafi Devers presser, obviously Bregman, the innuendo is that Bregman's going to be your everyday third baseman. right? That's the innuendo. That's the talk of the town. And Rafael Devers was not a fan, because when he was asked if he would switch positions or if he would DH, the answer was just a blanket no. In your time, Bradfo, you've been around this for a long time. Have you ever seen a more kind of candid press conference that you've seen from a player?
No, I mean, I think that players go into those things, those, you know, introductory spring training, sort of like the t-shirt gun for the season type of thing. And a lot of times they're like, this is the time I'm going to get my point across. I know I'm going to be asked this. I'm going to like make it very clear how I feel. I've seen that plenty of times, and that's always awesome. Marcus Stroman, you know, that was a smaller example. You know, I'm not going to the bullpen. I'm a starter. But for him, it wasn't like, okay, fine, whatever, man. Like, it is what it is. I don't think anyone's – it's not going to make or break. This isn't like one of the best players in baseball doing this. So you have that, but as we had talked about, the difference for me was how Devers did it. And it's always a weird dynamic anytime you have to go through a translator, anytime you have a different language. It's a weird – I feel bad for Davidson Perez. Like, that's a tough spot for him to be in. He's a translator. And so but how he did – and Rafi speaks English. Make no mistake about it. There's, like, the question, he understands it. But the way that he did it, which was just like, no. DH? No. First base? No. I'm a third baseman. And, you know, and even and it was funny, like, as you were going, and he was just rattling off the nose, like, well, what are you going to do? No. And like, who has control? Like, you know, I'm a third base. It was just all so matter of fact, and it was rapid fire, rapid fire, rapid fire. And then Dan Shaughnessy says out of nowhere, he's like, hey, have you had your physical? Yes. How much do you weigh? 140? I'm sorry, 240? And then he gives like the, why are you asking that? Like, it was just like, and then he goes through it, and then he gets up, and that's it. Like, there it is. That's it.
It's over.
It's over. And we're all sitting there and being like, this is a press conference we'll never forget. And those are always the best ones. And then, by the way, the next day, you have Tristan Casas get up there and saying, well, yeah, Rafael Devers should play third base. Alex Bregman should play second base. All these prospects, they shouldn't be in the majors. Basically making roster construction. And honestly, Alonso, the Casas thing made, I think, Alex Cora much more uncomfortable than the Devers thing, because he knew the Devers thing was coming.
Yeah, the Casas thing, I found interesting because of... And I don't know if maybe, and again, I'm just assuming here, right, optically, that maybe he's standing up for his guy. You know, that's a locker room leader, so on and so forth. And so I can appreciate that. That one is the one that, like, I was like, whoa, okay. And I'm sure there's people that think that there's some sort of disarray in the clubhouse. I don't think that. I just think what it was is, like I said, it seems to me that he's just out there protecting his guy. I'm not reading into that wrong, am I?
No, man, I think your instincts are keen. You know, I think a lot of people thought, some people might have taken it as, well, he's protecting his position because people think that Devers might go to first. Or I think, Alonso, you're right on. I think he's just like, he knows that Rafael Devers is an important part of the team. He perceives him as a big foundational, a leader in a certain way on that team, one of the best players in baseball, all that, an infield mate. And he was just saying, hey, it's a great observation by you, because at the heart of it, it's like he had just heard his teammate say, I am a third baseman. I want to play third base. So what does a good teammate do? A good teammate supports his teammate, right?
That's what you got to do.
Right, so what you got to do? And now it's not a perfect situation because he's saying Bregman should play second, and there's guys who probably want to play second, Vaughn Grissom and whatever. But still, Devers, in Casas's view, Devers is the guy, the ultimate guy that you stand by. And what's interesting, and we said this on the Joe podcast, was that Joe, I remember this, when Joe got in the Tyler Austin fight, and we had that in 2018. He basically said that how they had a team meeting after kind of like calling guys out when you have like the bullpen coach beating the outfielders in. And honestly, you know, if we could do the math, that's probably a young Mookie, you know, right? Not running in, right?
Right.
But he singled out Rafael Devers as a guy, him and Mitch Moreland, as a guy who were ready to go, ready to go. And that's not really how we view Rafael Devers, but that's how his teammates view him. And I thought that was really, really good insight.
No, and I mean, and again, I mean, obviously, like I know David Ortiz a couple hours ago, I forgot who was talking with him, basically is siding with Rafael Devers.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you're going to hear all this noise, right? And really what it comes down to is, what's Alex Cora going to do, right? I mean, that's now he's got to find that balance of stuff and just kind of rein it back in, because that's, I mean, that's the guy that's running the clubhouse, right? At the end of the day, you know, it's Alex Cora. So that's why I'm not worried, because Cora, as you know, is a player's guy. I mean, that's a part of the reason why he's been so successful, is he has a way of getting dudes to run through the wall for him. I mean, I've never played for him, and I've played at that level, but having heard some of the stuff that Cora says to guys, I'd run through a wall for him. You know, so I mean, if I feel that way, that clubhouse absolutely has to feel that way too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it brings up, you know, the importance of, and maybe this is a completely different topic and a bigger podcast, whatever.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
But it brings up the importance of a major league manager. And we had, as we tape this right now, you know, Aaron Boone had been extended. Yeah. And so did the terms ever come out about him, or?
I haven't seen the terms anywhere yet.
Yeah, I know it was for a couple of year extension, but still, when Cora signed his extension, it was $7 million, just over $7 million. And the only other manager that was making as much as $5 million was Craig Counsell. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to Scott Boras about this at the All-Star game, because they were still leveraging or helping his buddy Cora, and said, you know, managers are so dramatically underpaid. And Alonso, like, how can we argue that? I mean, how can you argue that? It's like these guys are getting paid like middle relief pitchers.
Yeah.
And their impact on the organization, as we're talking about, is huge. So again, maybe a bigger conversation. I don't know.
No, and even then, I mean, Dave Roberts is going to set kind of the market with some of that. But granted, he's also an outlier because of what he has to deal with. Him and Aaron Boone are really the only two guys that have to deal with what they have to deal with. Yes. Day in, day out. And that, for me, I was a little surprised it was only 2 years with Aaron Boone. I think it's until 27. That I was a little surprised by. But then again, nothing really surprises me with this current iteration of Yankees. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of things that I just kind of sit back and I'm like, huh. But as with the Dodgers, I feel like it'll truthfully, I think it's going to be probably a 3 to 5 year extension with Dave. And it'll probably obviously surpass whatever Council's getting. I think it was 5 years, $40 million is what he got. But to your point, they're being paid like middle relievers. I think Blake Treinen, if he would have had a 3 year deal, would be making more than Craig Council.
Right. And that's no disrespect to Blake Treinen,
no,
but
not at all.
But you're right. And I wonder, because I know Cora talked to Boone. And Cora had the opportunity to actually sign a 5-year deal, and he signs a 3-year deal. And I wonder if there was any sort of advice or, hey, listen, you don't want to be locked in on this. You want to make sure you have the good teams. You want to make sure you end with – you hit your contract year with a good team. Because if you don't, it's kind of like a bench coach. Like, bench coach – the bench coach dynamic is so funny to me. Because 1 year, you can have a bench coach who is the hottest commodity for managerial jobs. And then if that team, that they're the bench coach, have a terrible year, it's done.
Yeah,
I'm going to tell you a story like that. I remember, you know, I used to talk to Cora when he was at ESPN a lot. You know, when he could become manager, relationships changed a little bit. But
right. But
I remember him. He was up for the Houston bench coach job, and I remember having a conversation about this thing. Like, he wasn't saying, "Hey, you know what? You got to tell me whether or not I should take this job." But we were talking about it, and I said that I specifically said that. I remember saying, "Hey, you have options. If you have options, go to the team that you have a pretty good idea are going to be good." Because I've seen it happen. I saw it happen with Torre Lovello. Torre Lovello, they won the World Series in 2013, and then all of a sudden, the last place finishes start piling up a little bit. And really, what saved Torre was that you had. He took over for John Farrell when John Farrell unfortunately got sick, and he did great. And all of a sudden, everyone noticed he was a great communicator. He did great. Everyone responded to him. Then Mike Hazen got the job, and then he resurfaced himself. But for a couple of years there, he went from the hottest commodity to nothing. And, you know, like, that's the thing Dave Roberts has going for him, right? The Dodgers will never be bad. Like, you know, so, yeah, he can do whatever he wants.
No, and I'm about to say is, I mean, that's where he's truly an outlier, because if we learn anything over the last two off seasons, the Dodgers are just going to spend whatever they need to do to field the best team they possibly can. And apparently it doesn't matter what that price is, right? So that's why that's a little bit of an outlier. That, whereas with the Yankees, again, I don't know. I can't really pinpoint like what the strategy is, I guess, if that makes sense. You know, they're talking, we're wanting to go back to the World Series, so on and so forth, but there's just more, I don't know. I don't want to say discourse, but there's just a little more kind of stuff there than there has been with Yankees years prior. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And you know, if I'm Aaron Boone, if all he needs is another World Series appearance.
Yes.
And then he's set up for his next contract, whether it's there or somewhere else.
Yes.
You know, and Dave Roberts is, you have a guy who's going to be in the Hall of Fame, I think.
I agree.
Right. And so he can do anything he wants. The only question is, okay, well, how much is he? The council thing is so weird to me. And I know that sort of like this is a road that maybe we weren't planning on going down, but it's interesting to me.
No, it's fascinating, honestly.
No, the council thing is really interesting to me, because when he signs an $8 million a year contract, everyone said that's going to raise the market for all managers.
Yeah.
But there was a problem with that when Craig Counsell's Chicago Cubs weren't good. Like, all of a sudden, that's what we were talking with. Cora didn't sign his contract, saying, hey, an owner could easily say, listen, look at Counsell. Look at the Cubs. It's not worth it. Why should we do that? It's not worth paying this guy a record-setting fee. So, but at the end of the day, what happened was Cora's contract was really important, because he got close to Counsell and far more than the next guy.
Yeah.
So it is moving in the right direction. And now I wonder, okay, Dave Roberts is such a unique situation.
Yes.
Right? I mean, yes. Because it's I think the thing that he has going for him, why a lot of people would say, well, look, you know, look at this talent, look at this payroll, look at everything else. Well, if I'm Dave Roberts, I'm like, oh, yeah, why don't you roll back the DVR to the entire World Series of 2024 and talk to me about bobbing and weaving my way through that thing with that pitching staff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No. And we also forget the integral part of what the managerial role really kind of brings to the table. Like, I was thinking about this because it is a different era, right? But that that Netflix documentary that they did on the 04 Red Sox and how involved Tito was with the guys. Like that's it. Like for me, the clubhouses that I've been fortunate enough to be around, the ones that are good is when you have that manager that's a communicator, but also the players know they can go to their manager and talk about whatever it is they need to talk about. And Tito doesn't hold back in any way, right? Tito is very through the front door. You'll have those uncomfortable conversations, whether you like it or not, whether he likes it or not. And that's where kind of, you know, you learn. And obviously Dave was in some of those clubhouses, so he got to see that style, so on and so forth. And so that's where I think it's a little different, whereas Aaron Boone seems the same way to me. Boone seems that he's very through the front door. He's not afraid to kind of inject himself into the discourse, if you will, as we're seeing with what's happening with our boss. And it's one of those where that's a little different. Cora, although he's reserved, he is also not afraid to tell you how it is. Like we've seen that in press conferences too, where all that's there. Point is if you're willing to do that in front of the cameras, you're absolutely going to do that in the clubhouse, because those guys, if they see that you're phony, they're just not going to play hard.
No,
for you.
No. And it's a great point and great observation by you, because I think that a lot of the managing thing, like we've seen managers come and go where they've gone from this unbelievable manager to why did you get fired? A lot of it is the right place, right time.
Absolutely.
A lot of it is, and not only right place, right time, but right generation, right time. This is, what's interesting is that you have, if you go back and look at the last few years, the final four teams, the vast majority of them are older guys.
Yeah.
But I think that you say, well, you're contradicting yourself because it's right generation, right time. Well, I think the thing is that what makes those guys so good is that they understand exactly what you're talking about, of when to push the button, when to go through, when to delegate like crazy, and which is an important thing of understanding, like, this is important. This is the important thing. This isn't the important thing. And I think a lot of times when you get a lot of these managers who are gung-ho in there and they're like, oh, I'm going to relate, and we're going to do this, it's people are looking at me like, what? And, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, it's like you have the former White Sox manager. You know, it's like I like him. Like, I liked him, but I felt like it was like, I remember we did a podcast with him, and it's like, we're going to do this, and this is boom, boom. Like, it almost was like a football speech.
Yeah.
But we're not biting off anyone's kneecaps in a 162-game season. So, yeah.
No, it's like I saw the hype video that the Dodgers put out with Dave Roberts talking to the group, and then other players are standing up and saying whatever they need to say to, right? And you see that, and that's expected when you first get to camp. You have everyone there. You know, you're trying to set the tone for what you want the season to be. But in season, you'll also hear from Dave when they're asking you about the inevitable thing about injuries of, hey, how do you feel about this? Are you concerned about that? And he'll allude to it where it's like, hey, right now we're just trying to get these guys right, because the time that matters is October. You know, right now we're playing to get into October, because then that's when you start pressing those buttons again and doing all that stuff. Because at the end of the day, it's a grind. I mean, it's a really long grind.
Yeah.
And people forget that too, right? I mean, we're in February and we're already talking, you know, spring training. But I mean, think about that. February to October is a very long time. That's a lot of games. And of course, dudes are going to get hurt. But those really good managers know when to push those buttons, like you said. And it's not, the time isn't necessarily now, but it's just to set the tone for the season now.
Yeah, you're right. And so that's why, you know, if you have a press conference like Devers or Casas or Stroman or whatever it is, you understand, listen, dude, it's February. It's February.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say this. You said, you know, big part of it is setting the tone, setting the ground rules, and making sure everyone says, okay, we're going to hold ourselves accountable throughout the entirety of the season. And that's a huge, huge part of this, too. It's that you have to say, get in there and just say, hey, and Dave Roberts, what Dave Roberts has to say, I trust you guys. Hey, to not get caught up in the we won the World Series and aren't we great mentality. I trust you guys. And if you aren't doing it, then that's when I'm going to step in and reel it in.
Before I say you lose, Bradfo, there's another East Coast thing that's happening. We talked about it, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about it. Talked about it about a month ago, where the Blue Jays were able to get Ohtani to come to them to look at everything that's going on there, and that's a win in itself. You got the, the unicorn. Yeah,
get to go to Dunedin. I mean, like, that's the biggest win of all time.
And obviously, they didn't close the deal. And then they were in kind of at the end on Roki Sasaki. They were in on Yamamoto, so on and so forth. There's all these things where they've been in on guys. They made Juan Soto a favor, an offer, and all these things, and they just weren't able to close it. I said at that time that what I wanted to do is be in on those pitches to hear them, to hear why they're not able to close the deal. Like, what's the red flag? Why can't they close the deal? But I also said that they should offer 50% of what they offered Juan Soto to Vladdy Guerrero Jr., who is the face of your franchise. This week, they started talking in late December, apparently, is what the innuendo is, and they were not able to come to an agreement a couple days ago, and it didn't seem like Vladdy was too stoked one way or the other. But also the Blue Jays, it seemed like to me that the Blue Jays are still motivated to re-sign him, but they also are not looking at it like a loss, and I don't really understand what the hell is going on in Toronto, because it sounds like they weren't willing to exchange figures. All the reporting indicates it's around 375, 450, and the Blue Jays just couldn't get there for whatever reason, which is obviously well under that 50% threshold I talked about a second ago. What is happening in Toronto, Bradfield?
I think that, first of all, you know, you talk about these almost free agents. The fact that they got in the door with Sasaki, or they get in the door with Ohtani, they're doing something right to get them in the door.
Yeah.
I think that ultimately why they aren't able to close it, or why they aren't able to close a lot of these things, is it's Toronto, man. Like, Toronto's a great city, but it's Toronto. It's not LA. It's not New York. It's not these places. And when you're competing, especially for those Japanese players, well, you can go all the way to Toronto and it's completely all the way up there, or you can go to LA. That's a tough sell in itself. But when it comes to Vlad, this is what I would say, because I live this life with the Mookie stuff, is that you just basically have to say, hey, this is the absolute best offer that we can do. This is it. That's it. This is the best offer. And when you present that, and I'm talking about now, doing that now, present that to him. And if he then says no, then you say, okay, thank you, we are trading you. Because it's just bad business to hang on to a guy that you aren't going to sign, that you're hoping that you're going to be competitive with, because you can get, right now, this is when you're going to get the most value. There's no question about it. You got the team is getting Vlad for a year, qualifying offer, all that nonsense. So you can do that, and you can get enough players and enough value back, which will still make you a good team in 2025, and by the way, well beyond. I would want Vlad. Fine. But am I wrong? I mean, I just don't understand why more teams don't do this.
When they did the whole presser with the step and repeat and everything, I mean, even Passan was there, right? So that's how you know it was a big deal. Yeah. Shout out to Jeff Passan. I was surprised, candidly, that they came out and had that presser, because what they should have done, in my opinion, is they should have traded him and then done the press conference and explained why. Because to me, now obviously the fan base is like, whoa, what? Like, we could not re-sign the face of the franchise? Why? Like there has to be an explanation as to why outside of money. And I mean, listen, I mean, you and I both know guys are always going to, they know their value. They know what they're going to ask for. They know that, you know, they've already kind of, the agent that reps them has already done the market research. And if you're a Scott Boras guy, you have an exponential amount of market research, you know, so there's all this data that's there. I was just surprised that the Blue Jays are trying to do that whole, we're going to say the right thing for the fans. Mm-hmm. But the only right thing that you can say to this fan base is we're either going to trade him or we're going to re-sign him. It can't be anything in between. That's, I mean, but then again, I'm also a spoiled Dodger fan. So, I mean, I could be looking at this completely wrong.
No, no, man. Like, I'll give example. Juan Soto, San Diego, right? You have 1 year left, and you aren't going to sign him. You get back, I mean, enough players where all of a sudden when you get to the playoffs, you were perceived, with all due respect to the Dodgers, the Padres were perceived by many as the team to beat once the playoffs started. And the Dodgers will tell you, like, that the Padres were the toughest out, not even in question. And that was without Juan Soto. So, yeah, that's what they did. You can do that. But I think you hit the nail on the head. You did this press conference because you're hanging on by a cliff trying to placate a fan base. Sometimes you just got to rip off the Band-Aid and just move on.
Yeah.
So, it's nuts.
Yeah, I was just, more than anything, I was surprised just by that. And again, I mean, you got to give them credit. They still faced the criticism. You know, they went out and faced the music, but it doesn't make it any easier, right? Like, it's still, that's a tough blow when you have to announce to the world, especially your fan base, hey, we couldn't re-sign the guy. And to me, and 100% to your point, because if you wait until the trade deadline, you're not going to get as much value as you would get from today.
No. I mean, honestly, the best time to trade those guys are a year and a half out.
Yes.
It's the trade deadline before you get to this year. But I get it. Like, that's it's a tough thing, especially if you're sort of in it and everyone's sort of in it at the trade deadline now. But Toronto is such a weird thing because, Alonzo, like, I just look at this Toronto team for the last couple of years, and almost every year I say, oh, I think they have the most talent. I think they have the most talent. I think they have the most talent. And then they don't, and now they don't. It's just a weird dynamic, and you still have that front office, though, man. Like, they're there. They're hanging on. You know, they're Ross Atkins and Shapiro and those guys. I mean, they were this, believe me, I mean, I forget how many years they've been there, but it was supposed to bear fruit by now.
Yeah.
And it hasn't.
No. And I mean, and again, it's, you have the face of your franchise that is willing to play ball, right? Hey, let's talk about this. And the face of your franchise is now, I'm ready to go to free agency, and is cryptically liking things on social media that involve him in other uniforms.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm just like, oh, that's, see, now what you've done is you've opened the can of worms. And as we all know, the proverbial can of worms is very hard to close once it's opened.
Yeah.
And so for me, my just biggest worry would be, and maybe again, this is the generational thing, is you just don't want a disgruntled guy, right? I mean, that's my biggest worry, is that he's going to get disgruntled or frustrated with all the, you know, the lack of extension talk and all that. And that, you know, all those little things boil up and then it turns into a big thing, and you just don't need that in your clubhouse.
Yeah, unless he just rakes, and then all of a sudden he's just basically saying his price tag go up and up and up and up and up and up. So I don't know.
What I think is going to happen, honestly. I think he's
I don't think he's a guy who's going to fold and all of a sudden be like, oh my goodness, I can't possibly perform in a contract year. No, yeah. I mean, we saw last year how good he is. Incredible, incredible hitter, incredible player.
If he's anything like his daddy, I think he's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Well, Bradfo, enjoy the sun while us are in other places where it's snowing and very cold. Not sunny and shady, like you can just be sitting outside on your little enclosed patio.
My little rented lanai here. And so I appreciate it. I love spring training. I do it not only because of warm weather. And the great thing is, you know, nobody cares about this, but because we do the broadcast, we, instead of getting a hotel, we have the engineer and we rent a house because it's cheaper for the company.
Yeah.
So, which is great. So I said, Hey, my wife, she's like, well, I'll come down and I'll get a job at the park. So she gets a job at the park. She checks all the media credentials. I get to see her a few times a day. And it's a great time. Yeah, it's sort of easing our way into the later parts of our life. So, but it's all good. And in the meantime, I show up at the clubhouse at 8, and I talk to very, very groggy baseball players. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the upside is you're winning at life because your wife got a job at the park, and you can see her a few times throughout the day. She's hanging with you after you finish your broadcast. What more do you want?
Yeah. Well, I would like to make more than $12 an hour, but
That's fair. That's fair. That's fair.
No, it's not good. It's
however, not there's good. No state tax in Florida. So,
oh,
so see, it's closer to $11.75. So
I like it.
Well, check out another edition of the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast with Joe Kelly that we just did a couple of days ago. That's out live now. It's a good listen. I listened to it earlier in the car and I chuckled. You will too. And as always, this is West Coast Bias presented by Baseball Isn't Boring. And we'll do the spring training check-in again here soon, Bradfo.
Awesome. You're the best. Thanks, Alonzo.
Thanks, my guy.